Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more roar for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, with your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud wall cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew. And the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. It's June 17th, 2010. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest.
There beside the singing river, that dark mass of men were seen. Far above their shining weapons hung their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune.
Right, a few short comments to begin with. First up is obviously the arrest on Friday the 11th of Idaho attorney Edgar Steele by the FBI on charges of allegedly trying to hire a hitman to murder his wife and his mother-in-law. I'm going to wait for a while until the situation clarifies before I make any extensive comment, although I find it rather difficult to believe that a 64-year-old man who just a couple of months ago was in the hospital for major open-heart surgery would be concentrating on anything but restoring his health. As per usual, there was an FBI informant involved. Beyond that, I want to wait until I get better and more detailed information before I comment. I would take this opportunity to remind all of you yet again that anyone who attempts to involve you in illegal activity is either a cop or a lunatic, but you never know when he's wired and there's a tape running somewhere. So if anyone ever does that, make sure that you state in a loud and clear voice for the tape that you have no intention of breaking the precious law of our lords and masters. Oh, and a P.S. to that, I just got in on Tuesday, June the 15th, and I was informed that the Coeur d'Alene police allegedly removed a bomb either from within Edgar Steele car or from underneath it. No one knows quite what the story is. I guess they're going to try and claim that this 64-year-old guy who can barely walk due to major surgery a couple of months ago is really Dr. Fu Manchu or Dr. No of crime, and he's now planting bombs in his own car from inside the federal detention facility. This one has the makings of a real federal fairy tale, but you know, they're really good at arresting old men like Bob Chambliss and Richard Butler, men in their 70s. You know, this may be pushing dangerously close to the line here, but I really do wonder sometimes just how these big bad feds would do if they ever came up against some real opposition, some genuine resistance, somebody who isn't 70 years old, somebody who knows what they're doing, somebody they can't sneak up on and do a dynamic entry on while they're asleep, somebody they can't sucker punch, and above all, somebody who really, honest to God, is not afraid of them. I really wonder how the mighty FBI and ATF and other suits would do if they ever came up against somebody like that, one-on-one. Maybe I'll put a scene like that in one of my books one day. Oh, wait, I already did. Several scenes like that, in fact. Next, Jerry from Kansas wants to know if I have seen the television series Sons of Anarchy about the motorcycle gang, and what do I think of it, and do I think bikers could ever be useful to the Northwest independence movement. As to the television series, yes, I saw the first season. It's kind of like a down-market version of The Sopranos. It had some good points and a lot of bad ones, including some really nauseating sex stuff, if that bothers you. I put it this way, I'm pretty hardened myself after living my lifetime in this toilet, but some of those scenes were raunchy and sick enough to bother even me. Obviously, the worst aspect of the show is the fact that the two lead roles are played by a couple of Jews, Ron Perlman and Katie Sagal. I've noticed that Jewish actors all love nothing better than dressing up in Nazi uniforms for World War II movies and anything to do with Nazism or Germany, etc., especially SS uniforms. It's kind of an open secret in Hollywood that anytime there's a movie or a television show being made that calls for dressing up in a Nazi uniform, there is a line of Jewish actors out the door demanding the part. Good example is that incredibly stupid Nazi episode in the original Star Trek series. Supposedly, that was written especially to give the two Jewish lead actors, William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy, an excuse to dress up as SS men. Sorry, I know I'm wandering again. Anyway, this fascination or fetish that Jewish actors appear to have with dangerous and allegedly anti-Jewish white men appears to apply to biker flicks as well. I've never actually heard of a Jewish biker, although I suppose there may be the odd weirdo exception. Kikes really enjoy role-playing as the big bad goyim who terrify them. There's also the fact that in Sons of Anarchy, one of the rival gangs is a group of skinhead drug dealers called the Nords, who have all kinds of swastika and racial tattoos, and of course the good bikers are constantly whooping up on them. They're kind of like what I used to call Steve McQueen Germans. You know those old war movies where the Germans yell Mach Schnell and spray their Schmeissers in the air and never hit anything, and then Steve McQueen fires a couple of rounds from an M1 and they all drop dead? I suppose that the Hollywood scriptwriters had to put the Nords in there just to show that the tough white hero bikers in the main cast were really good lefties and liberals at heart. Yeah, right. But Sons of Anarchy does have a few good characters and scenes in it, like the Jewish ATF agent who's stalking the local white female doctor and who gets thrown through a plate glass window by one of the bikers, and then he breaks into the doctor's house and tries to rape her, and he comes to a gratifyingly sticky end. And there's another ATF agent, some hot babe in a power suit who's really evil, plants evidence, threatens the bikers' families, and so on. And she's interrogating one of the bikers in prison, and he goes berserk and slams her Barbie doll face into the table a couple of times and breaks her nose. I'll say this, whoever wrote the series doesn't think much of the ATF. The portrayal of that particular agency as just as much criminals as the bikers is pretty much spot on. As to whether real-life bikers would ever be of much use to the Northwest Front or any other white political movement, like most other things, this has been tried in the past. Commander Rockwell had an ANP biker chapter in California led by a guy named Mike Brown for a while. But it's never worked out worth a damn. Bikers are basically anarchists and hedonists, and movement life doesn't offer much in the way of sex and drugs and rock and roll. These days, most of the original clubs have become largely a form of organized crime. I've known a few ex-bikers who were good people, but you don't want to get involved with them in any way when they're still in the club and doing their whole biker thing, because they will drag you into their scene and not vice versa, and that's something you don't want. This is from Ryan in Missouri. Hello, I was wondering if you would suggest to any white nationalist upcoming the age of 18 that he join the U.S. military. I'm a little conflicted because it will allow the person to receive training for the time we dare not speak of, as well as a bit of maturity boost for the individual. However, you're fighting a Jewish war that benefits the security of the United States very little to none at all. What do you think? Okay, my recommendation is basically no. For many reasons, not necessarily in this order. First off, we are running out of time. We have enough people as it is giving me excuses to continue lollygagging in Florida and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and wherever else they've got their pale asses plunked down because they simply treat us as some kind of entertainment and they don't feel like exerting the effort to get their butts up here where they're supposed to be. We need everybody to get their asses here to the homeland where they're needed, not gallivanting off around the world to shitholes like Iraq and Afghanistan, which is exactly where you're going if you join the Army. As to training, there are other ways to get the knowledge and the experience that you need. Now, secondly, any benefits you get from the military do not justify the risk of coming back minus an arm or a leg or blind or in a wheelchair. Unlike our movement, the Muslims actually do shoot back, and I'd feel very bad if one of our few actual kids were to join up thinking he was somehow helping the cause and come back in fragments. Thirdly, there is a moral issue in that as a member of the United States military, you will be joining what amounts to a criminal organization. Remember, American soldiers are now doing everything that the Geneva Convention outlaws, the kind of thing The Hague and the United Nations arrested the former president of Yugoslavia for doing. The United States is the bad guy in all this and has been since 1917 when we went to war to kill our racial brothers in Europe. You will become part and parcel of the Zionist war machine, and you will be committing crimes against innocent people who, even if they do happen to have brown skins, have never done anything to deserve having their land invaded, their children napalmed, and the one natural resource they have, their petroleum, stolen away from them by George W. Bush and Halliburton. Fourth, if you join and support the United States military, you will also thereby become, by extension, part and parcel of the ongoing crime against humanity, which is the illegal and criminal state of Israel. And that's even worse. Without getting too religious or metaphysical here, I think helping Israel in any way is the kind of thing that risks the eternal damnation of one's soul. There is also the possibility, Ryan, that you may not survive basic training, literally. The Army is now lowering standards to the point where they're taking criminals, drug addicts, gangbangers from the projects, literally anybody they can get their hands on. Most of the rank and file are now non-white, so you'll be in a perpetual minority living among some really dangerous niggers and beaners. Recruiters are falsifying test scores and concealing criminal records and past drug histories, so forth and so on. Ryan, you really don't want to be thrown from your little country home in Missouri into a barracks with a lot of the worst human garbage the filthy urban ghettos of this country produces. Trust me on this, you don't. Okay, all of that having been said, if for any reason you feel that you absolutely must go in the service, Ryan, or more likely if you are forced to go for economic reasons because there simply aren't any entry-level jobs in your part of Missouri because the damn Mexicans have taken them all, then for God's sake, don't go into the Army or the Marines. They are the ones who will use you for cannon fodder and send you to Iraq or Afghanistan and maybe Iran in a few months' time and get your arms and legs blown off. I don't know how your grades were in school or how you did in things like math, but if it's at all possible, try to get into the Air Force, or failing that, the Coast Guard. The standards there have always been a lot higher, and it's still a lot whiter to this day. I said Coast Guard, not Navy. The Navy these days is not much better than the Army. I understand that the political correctness factor in the Navy has gone completely apeshit. All promotions are race and gender-based, the racial situation on board ship is really bad, and also the Army is so short of boots on the ground that they're now taking surplus naval ratings off ships in the Persian Gulf, kind of like being Shanghai in the old seafaring days, and they're creating naval shore battalions for combat duty on the ground in both Iraq and Afghanistan. So a lot of those swabbies who thought that they'd get out of the bad stuff are ending up in Baghdad and the Hindu Kush Mountains just like the regular infantry. What you need to do, Ryan, is to come here to the Northwest homeland, go to college or technical school, learn a trade, meet a girl, and start sinking your roots and building your life here. There are other ways to get you the training and knowledge you need without putting your life at risk and without staining your soul with crime. Next question from Merlin Reichert. Actually, I didn't make a note of where he's from. Dear HAC, I was listening to one of the conservative talk shows, and the guest, a famous economist, was speaking about the sunset clause on the Bush tax cuts. He said that if they were not made permanent, the economy would collapse in 2011. What's your take on this? Well, Bush tax cuts or no, there's going to be massive tax increases anyway to pay for Obamacare. Basically, if you're lucky enough to be employed this year, you won't be getting any refund on your 2010 tax return, that's for sure. So don't count on your refund to take care of any specific bills or financial needs like a lot of people do. You most likely won't get it. The government will keep it as your first installment on Obamacare. That's the way they're going to collect all these extra taxes, by the way, plus the fines for not buying government health insurance. They're simply going to confiscate your tax refund or else increase your withholding to 60% or so like they do in Europe. When I was living in Ireland, the highest withholding rate for what they call PAYE, pay as you earn, was 64%, although to be sure there were all kinds of ways you could work that down. But after this year, it will become increasingly rare for anyone to get any kind of tax refund at all. You have to understand, somebody has to pay for all this deranged democratic spending. It's not like that nigger woman in Detroit said, you know, they don't just take it out of Obama's stash. And the abominations don't really have too much choice other than to start killing the geese that lay the golden eggs, i.e. the last white people who are employed in the private sector. Like all conservatives, Rush Limbaugh is concerned about his money and not about his race, but you have to understand that Limbaugh and his kind do have some telling points when it comes to economics. That part of their shtick they do get right, and it's the private sector that produces wealth, or used to, back in the days when America actually made things. That's another part of our economic problem now. America doesn't actually manufacture much of anything anymore. The entire post-World War II middle-class experience was made possible by men who came home from the war, most of whom went to work in factories, on assembly lines, or in other kinds of heavy industry, building things, making things, manufacturing actual products, and getting paid good wages so that they in turn could go out on the weekends and buy the products that other Americans made. Now, that's no longer the case. You go into a Walmart, and the overwhelming majority of the merchandise you find in there is cheap Chinese or other third world junk. Unnecessary plastic objects, as Nancy Griffith calls them. One of the many, many reasons our economy is in the toilet is that for decades now, American money has not been recirculating within America. It's been flowing out of the country, either due to our trade imbalance with Asia or else it's been sent to Mexico by the hordes of illegal aliens who are draining our economy like millions of leeches. As to the economy collapsing, I'd say it's doing a pretty good job of collapsing right now, but yes, I imagine 2011 will be worse. We tend to think of these things as one big crash, and sometimes there is a date we can use to anchor the concept of the crash, like Black Thursday, October 24, 1929. But the Depression didn't all just come crashing down on that one day, and on Friday, October the 25th, 30 million Americans weren't all of a sudden out of work. It's not generally remembered, but in the months after Black Thursday, the stock market actually recovered somewhat. Now, the Great Depression was a cumulative thing. The worst of it didn't hit until about 1933. Just as the Obama Depression of today is an ongoing cumulative kind of thing, it began on Black Tuesday, November 4, 2008, and it will take several more years to fully hit us. When it does, it will be worse. You have to bear in mind that the Americans of today have a lot farther to fall than our grandparents did, or great-grandparents did, in 1929. Okay, first music break. A little Irish easy listening. This is Artie McGlynn. I got one email from a lady who asked a series of long and very good questions about homecoming, and she concluded with a request that I use part of one of these Radio Free Northwest podcasts to go over all of the practical reasons why white people should come Northwest and the emotional and spiritual aspects of homecoming. Okay, fair enough. Look, there are a host of reasons why you may not feel that you can move, and let's can all that crap about, oh, Harold, I just can't move right now. Time and events are not standing still here, and experience shows that vague promises to come home next year or the year after in practice means never. Like I said, I get the reasons why not. Not all of them are bad reasons having to do with laziness and chicken shit cowardice, inability to sell a house, a good job with people you may like, family commitments, love of place, and all these are perfectly understandable and logical reasons to stay where you are, as well as laziness and chicken shit cowardice. All right, Harvey's telling me to shut up. But we need to be honest, people. Northwest migration aside, the coming decades are going to be full of problems and chaos everywhere. And one way or the other, there will be a lot of migration going on the part of everybody, a lot of it unwilling and unwanted. Northwest migration is a good and sensible answer to a lot of the problems you may have in your personal and family life, and these are problems that you're going to have to deal with one way or the other. And while it's not easy, it's always easier to consciously choose to step away before you are forced to leave than it is to abandon your home in pain and storm and disaster when something happens that makes it absolutely impossible for you to remain where you are any longer. All this talk about standing and fighting is bullshit, yet another excuse not to come home. No one is standing and fighting anywhere. For white people, getting out of Dodge is the way to go, to the Northwest, where we can build communities and someday really stand and fight with our own people around us. People, things are going to get bad, bad, bad. You really should consider leaving where you are and doing it sooner rather than later because you have little or no hope of successfully remaining in place in the storm that is coming. Okay, I get that some of this comes down to long versus short-term issues, and there are balances to be struck. For example, let's say you're in your 50s or 60s. Now, that's a bad time of life to make a move, true. But think about what's in store for you when you're in your 80s. What the country will be like then. Do you really want to have to face living in a nigger ghetto or a Mexican barrio as an 80-year-old white man or woman? Do you have a support network that will help you if you stay? If you wait to make the move until things get much worse, how likely is it that you'll be able to sell your house as the area you live in becomes unfit for human habitation? You may be worried that you can't get your equity out now. Well, what about another 5 years or 10? Do you really want to gamble on the system being able to right itself? I mean, you do realize, don't you, that the great housing boom of the early 2000s is gone forever and it's not coming back? You may be one of those stubborn people who just says, "This is my home and I'm staying here." Well, I got a hot flash for you. Your right to live where and how you want is not inviolable. When things get worse and worse, no one is going to care about you or what you want or your so-called rights. In case you hadn't noticed, white people don't run this country anymore except for the very super rich ones at the top. You call the police, there's a chance that the officer who responds is going to have a black or brown face. What kind of help or support for your so-called rights do you think you're going to get there? Okay, look, here's my list of how to think seriously about coming home. Now, things will be different, and there will be exceptions in every case, I know. Number one, if you were stupid enough to sign an adjustable rate mortgage back during the housing boom and you can't reset it, if you're already facing foreclosure and have no reason to believe you'll be able to pay for your house, or if your current house was bought near the market peak and you require two full incomes to pay for it and you have little equity, then I think you need to read the handwriting on the wall. The odds are good you're going to lose your house anyway, because all it will take is one lost job and one lost income, and that can happen in a heartbeat these days. Tomorrow morning, you could find yourself without an income. Thank you very much, Barry Satoru. Do not go frantically into debt trying to keep your old way of life up and running. That closes off other options even worse. If you can see the train coming down at you full speed, get off the tracks. Go ahead and sell up and come home to the Northwest. If you do end up in full foreclosure, remember the magic words, produce the note. Require that the company do full due diligence and then stay in your house and live free as long as you can. You might as well save up rent and deposits for your homecoming to the Northwest. Number two, if you have young children, you really need to think about getting them into a permanent situation and living area now, while they're still too young to remember Minneapolis or Miami or wherever the hell they're living at present, so that they can have a stable future life. Ripping up a kid when they're 10 or 12 or a teenager is usually not a good idea if it can be at all avoided. Number three, many, entirely too many, middle-aged white people, especially white males, end up getting stuck with caring for elderly parents, especially if you're divorced and if you have married siblings. Now, I have seen this kind of thing happen so often, I swear it follows some kind of script. The married siblings tell our guy, well, you screwed up your life by being a wicked, evil racist. It's all your fault. But we have families and real lives, and so you can earn your keep in the family by taking care of Mama or Daddy or Meemaw or whoever. And, of course, there's also the aspect that you may really love Meemaw or Daddy or Uncle Albert or whoever. I first noticed this pattern some years ago, and now, ironically, some of our people are being liberated, if that's the word, by the death of the elderly relative. The way that seems to work out is that the person who was stuck with the caregiving is usually too spiritually exhausted after all those years to do much of anything movement-wise. They have been forced, either through love or emotional blackmail, to give up the best and potentially most politically productive years of their lives. And by the time the senior citizen finally obliges by checking out, they are in need of a caregiver themselves, sometimes literally. As much as I hate to sound mean and cruel to the old folks, especially since I'm well on the way to becoming one myself, I have to take a purely rational and pragmatic position here. The Northwest Republic needs you. Your people need you more than one person needs you. Long experience teaches me enough to warn you guys that if you allow yourself to get sucked into the position of being the primary or sole resource of an elderly person or couple, then that's pretty much you gone. Congratulations, you have your excuse to sit out the movement and the revolution for the duration. Got responsibilities, you see. Got to take care of the old folks. The problem is, and let me say this again clearly, your people need you more than one person does. That is a moral decision that you are going to have to make on your own. I can't make it for you. Number four, getting back to the house selling thing, another point just occurred to me. If you need income from the sale of your house, you might want to think about selling sooner rather than later, because there will probably come a point at which the number of people who want to live wherever you live now declines dramatically, and it will be even tougher to sell than it is now. Now, even if some places do become uninhabitable, they probably won't do so immediately, but remember that it will probably become gradually and increasingly harder to live there, and as the area around you deteriorates and turns into a zoo, the likelihood of your getting out, short of packing the car in a U-Haul and downright fleeing to the Northwest, becomes ever more bleak. You know, someday we're going to have that situation. People are going to simply pack their cars and flee to the Northwest with nothing but the shirts on their backs. You might want to think about getting in ahead of the rush. Number five, never forget how just plain physically dangerous it can be living around large numbers of blacks and Mexicans, and it will get even more dangerous as the time goes on. Staying where you are can get you killed, literally, as in waking up in the middle of the night and finding some nigger or Mexican standing over your bed with an iron bar or a butcher knife in his hand. Now, that applies especially when you get older. It is notorious that elderly white people are easy targets in racially mixed neighborhoods. The stupid niggers or beaners always assume that old white people have a fortune stuffed in their mattresses, being as they're too stupid to realize that if the old white guy had any money, he wouldn't be living around them. Number six, if you have children, think hard. What kind of future do they have where you are now? You really need to think about the larger consequences of committing to a place that almost certainly does not have a future. Your children will probably have to leave to get work at the very least. They may have to go into the military because those are the only jobs available these days for white boys. We've got 50 years of Democrat rule coming when Obama amnesties the illegals and gets them all registered to vote by 2012, so stop counting on the Republicans to save you. Once that amnesty bill goes through, the Republicans are never going to see the inside of the Oval Office again. If you have land or something you hope to pass down to your kids, what will it be worth 30 years from now? You see, this is the whole key to homecoming, thinking about the big picture, about the future, not just the inconveniences of the present. Number 7. If your present home is untenable and you plan to move anyway, why not come all the way northwest? There are people on this list who came west from the East Coast and stopped just short of the homeland. They ended up in places like South Dakota and Salt Lake City. They moved northward in California out of Los Angeles, but they stopped short of the Oregon state line. Why the hell not come all the way? I've never understood that. I think there must be something that frightens people about making that last step, admitting that Harold was right, driving those last few miles and settling down in the Northwest homeland itself. Look, if you're going to do it right. Don't make a half-assed migration, a homecoming light. Go all the way. Come here, to the Pacific Northwest, and don't dick around with the Dakotas or Northern California or Alaska or whatever. By the same token, I notice that a lot of homecomers, and yes, we are starting to get some, pointedly avoid the area where I myself am. It's like they're afraid I'll make demands on their time and resources, and they're right, I will. But that's fine. I know a lot of people aren't coming here to the Northwest to help me or the NF. They're coming here to find a little hole in the woods to hide in from the big bad Obama and pull it in after them. Yeah, that's fine. Look, it's better to do the right thing for the wrong reason than to do the wrong thing for any reason. As long as you land your ass here in the Northwest, you're headed in the right direction. Okay, second music break. Back to Appalachia now. This is Iris DeMent singing an old ballad called Pretty Sarah. And if you hear some funny things like crickets chirping and dogs barking, it's because this track was actually recorded on somebody's front porch up in the mountains of North Carolina. Okay, time to talk about some of the reaction I got to last week's podcast. Well, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I'm proud to say that most of you out there understood exactly what I was saying and agreed with me, at least insofar as you told me by email. Now, if I can only get you to agree with me so much that you pack a moving van and come home. Look, my position is simple. It is time for the endless debate to end. It is time for the endless introspection and contemplation of our navels to end. All this sound and fury on the internet and this gibbering on V-bulletin boards like VNN is simply an excuse to continue to do nothing. We do not need more debate. That part of things has been decided with the Butler Plan. We now need action to implement it. There is no longer any serious question about what we have to do. I say again and again and again, as long as I need to say it, that Northwest migration is the only game in town for the white race. The other groups and the other fearless leaders have had their chance. They've had their chance for the past 50 years to come up with some kind of plan or strategy that will succeed in securing the existence of our people and a future for white children, and they've come up empty. Zip, zilch, nada. The Northwest migration is it. So you need to decide what the hell it is you're going to do. How long are you just going to continue to sit there behind that computer and post to Stormfront and VNN and pretend that you're actually accomplishing something? That's the question. And I understand that certain people with a vested interest in the status quo aren't too happy about my asking that question, which is why I'm banned from VNN. Most of the objections that people make to me about coming home are legitimate in and of themselves. I get it. I just went over a number of those issues a few minutes ago. I don't want them to feel that I'm singling them out, but I am desperately trying to convey to you folks some sense of urgency about this. Our time is no longer infinite, and doing nothing simply is no longer an option. All right, the next email is from Phil in Arkansas. I'll deal with it in multiple parts. Dear Harold, need a step-by-step guide to repairing white character, not simply you need to become the men your great-grandfathers would recognize, rather something like a 2-week plan on day one, do this, day two, the next thing, etc., etc. Phil, I wish to God that there was such a plan, but there isn't. The process of character rebirth that I talk about is a mystical experience that many occult sages and whatnot have sought all of their lives and never found. It is a completely individual experience that varies from individual to individual, and I'm repeating myself there, but you get the idea. There is no 12-step program to make a white man a man again. Maybe we can actually design some kind of 12-step program for American Assholes Anonymous, I don't know. But even if we did, we couldn't force them to do it, because these transformations are all internal and there's no way we can get inside their heads, at least not without coercive state power. Indeed, I think that's one of the reasons we need state power. I think we ought to be able to experiment and see if there's, in fact, some way we can deprogram liberals. You know, the brain works like a computer, or rather, a computer works like an artificial brain, and so maybe someday we'll be able to insert a microchip in a liberal or a leftist's brain to delete all the bad and stupid files from their cortex. They say you can't fix stupid. Well, maybe in the Northwest Republic it'll turn out that we can. We could always do like they did to Alex in A Clockwork Orange, use induced revulsion therapy, strap the liberal down and wire electrodes to him and show him pictures of race mixing and homosexuality and Obama and Arianna Huffington and use drugs and electroshock when he sees those pictures so that his body and his mind associates, you know, liberalism and the Israeli flag and so forth with pain and nausea. It'd be really cool if we could find some way to program liberals to vomit at the sight of Jon Stewart. Okay, kidding aside, the problem is that spiritual transformation requires intense internal self-analysis and insight into the whole human condition, and yet so few young white people have been taught how to think. They've been taught to feel instead, and feelings alone won't cut it. Emotion on its own cannot bring about a total spiritual transfiguration like I envision. It takes a large dose of good, hard, cold intellect, as well as will in the Nietzschean sense with a capital W, and that is almost completely absent from young white boys today. Okay, I know, I'm sloughing off Phil's question. I'll do what I can to answer it, which isn't much. Phil, you want basically a 12-step program to turn a pale 2010 kid into a young man from 100 years ago. I can't give you 12 steps, but for anyone out there who wants to give the old transfiguration trick a shot, here's a couple of steps you might try. First off, remove yourself from the computer as much as possible. I understand that it's probably no longer possible for modern people to have nothing at all to do with the internet. And indeed, if you weren't on the internet, you wouldn't be listening to me now, would you? Still, cut back on the computer time as much as possible. Use the time you save to sit down and read books. Do that for about a year. Force yourself to stay away from the electronic screens of both the television and the personal computer for as much as you can and read books. The electronic screen shows you things, leaves nothing to the imagination. Reading books tells you things, forcing you to use your head to figure out what things mean and to visualize the scenes that the author is describing. I think that's probably the thing that makes electronic imaging so much worse for you than reading. It removes the element of imagination. As to what you should read, we do have a recommended reading list for the NF, and I need to dust that off anyway and start distributing it. You can email me for a copy of it. But the main thing is that you slow down and start reading instead of staring at electronic images on a screen. Electronic imaging is just as much a form of addiction as any liquor or cocaine, except that instead of a chemical substance, imaging uses electron beams to stimulate certain brain cells via the optic nerve. You need to kick the habit. Step 2. I won't tell you to sit down and read history so you can learn about the present and the future by learning from the past, because that is a lifetime vocation, which I myself started when I was about 11 years old, and Phil wants a quick fix. So once you've shaken as much of the electronic goop out of your head as you can shake, look very carefully at the world around you. Study what makes it tick and how it works. Begin to extrapolate. Look into the future and try and envision what the world's going to be like in 20 or 30 years if nothing is done. Again, don't feel, think. Step 3. Okay, there is a religious or psychic or metaphysical aspect to all this that I myself can't supply for the individual person. I'm not going to go into my own views on the subject because this isn't about me or what works for me. As I've said, this is all individual and each person is different. But the upshot of it is that you need to examine your own metaphysical or religious worldview and determine your place in it. What does God or the gods or the force or the great pumpkin or whatever want you to do, if anything? Suppose he, she, they, or it don't want you to do anything and just put you here and walked away. Well, then it's all up to you what you do with your life, right? So if you choose to devote it to your people and their racial survival, God won't be mad with you. Do you believe, I mean, honestly believe, that God has ordained the United States of America as some kind of divine institution to rule over mankind, and that if you revolt against the United States and obey Obama, God's going to cast you into a lake of burning fire forever and ever? One thing I suggest you figure out is whether or not you believe God will ever cast you into a burning lake of fire or other eternal torment at all. Because, frankly, believing in hell is not a good thing for a revolutionary. The authorities have always found the fear of hell to be a very useful tool for threatening and frightening people into obedience, and you need to make sure they can't use that weapon against you. And you'd be surprised how deeply that fear can be instilled into someone, even someone who thinks they're free of it. Anyway, the long and the short of it is you need to assert your intellect and your will over your emotions and your adrenal glands. You need to make a conscious and rational decision as to what kind of man or woman you are going to be, and then be that person. You must make a conscious, deliberate decision that you will no longer be a whiskey priest, that you will not only know what is right, but that you will do it. Phil, I'm sorry that's as close as I can get to getting into somebody else's head and telling them how they can accomplish something which is intensely personal and as unique to every individual as his fingerprint or his DNA. I could babble on and on here for 10 hours and still do no better. So, how about another music break? I think we need something grand and heroic to wash away all that psycho babble. Here's the Battle of the Mounds from the Conan the Barbarian soundtrack. But Phil has yet more topics he wants me to make long speeches about. Phil also wants, quote, advice on speaking with our fellow whites who may not be racially aware, how to respond to things like, what do you think of the response to the oil spill in the Gulf, or looks like there will be a strong Republican showing in the midterm elections. Well, on the oil spill, you might say, how come Hurricane Katrina was all Bush's fault, but Obama doesn't get any blame for Deepwater Horizon? On the Republican thing, you might say, yeah, from Obama back to Bush, from dumber back to merely dumb. Guys, look, I can't micromanage your lives. Just plain common sense goes a long way. By the way, yeah, all the usual Glenn Beck caveats and disclaimers taken as read, but he wrote a book called Arguing with Idiots, How to Debate with a Liberal, and I'm told it's supposed to be pretty good. You might want to check that one out. Like I've said before, Limbaugh and Beck have only one third of the story, the economic third. They're missing the other two thirds, race and the Jews, but the economic stuff they actually do pretty well on, and they can help you get your foot in the door if you have someone on your hands who might be salvageable. Phil from Arkansas also asks me for, and I quote, an official Northwest Front policy on behavior towards the constant bombardment of racial treason and other abominations we confront in our daily lives. Why, I expect you all to immediately assault any racially mixed couple you see on the street and end up doing 10 years in prison for hate crime. I'm sorry, haven't I made that clear? I expect you in all circumstances to be a soldier, to maintain discipline, to act the part of a spy behind enemy lines and maintain your cover, and to do nothing that will cause you to become non-functional in society, nothing that will bring you to the attention of the police, nothing that will cause you to be arrested and photographed and fingerprinted and cataloged. I expect you to do as I do, to look right through every bucket of excrement that America drops on your head, shut off your ears to all the background noise and concentrate on what you need to do for the resistance. You have a mission in life to fulfill, and that mission is more important than your personal well-being, your feelings, or your sensibilities. Pound this through your head. This is not all about you. It is about securing the existence of our people and the future for white children. It is about bringing the Northwest American Republic into existence in reality as well as in my novels. It is about redeeming the honor of our race and fishing our pride and our integrity out of the mud where we have been dragging it for 50 years. I expect you to save your money, do your scouting trip, do your job hunting, pack that moving van, and get your ass up here where you're supposed to be. Let nothing interfere with that. American life is full of things that will distract you from your duty, but these are obstacles that you must overcome. You must live in a dark and rotten world so that someday future generations of white children may grow to maturity in the light. You're not involved in this white national thing for you. You are representing 1,000 million little angels not yet born. You are here and doing what you're supposed to be doing so that someday they can come here and do what they're supposed to do. And as for the Jews and the niggers and the pale scum who wallow in America's filth all around you every day and fill your nostrils with the stench of their moral gangrene, well, just remember the old jailhouse saying, what goes around comes around. Well, our time is up, and so that's it for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 4856, Seattle, Washington, 98194. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sasha Andaman. Freedom.